Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is best-selling author Chris Therrien, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorilla?
Looking pretty jacked today.
Jacked? I don't think so. Okay, I hope the cameras look like that, because I've been seeing myself lately going, oh. Yeah.
Looking all swole.
Maybe throw a workout in there, Nast.
Yeah?
No, I just started, though. I got back at it.
Did you? Yeah,
I did. Maybe that's why I'm so jacked today.
Yeah, we look it.
Yeah, right.
Chest is all these, puffy.
He's got garner snakes.
These
garner
snakes.
My fucking garner snakes. Garner snakes. My biceps have never been swollen. I guarantee that, unless I got hit or something. I don't know. But hey, man, missed you again at men's league, so just want to throw that out. Oh yeah, we had a bye week. I didn't even tell you that.
Oh, you asshole. I felt bad.
You should.
I was in Miami.
You made two games out of 10.
Well, life gets in the way, you know.
Oh my god, men's league's more important.
I know. I wish I could make more games.
We are
back travel an hour to play men's league, dude.
Oh, here we go
with my kids.
Well, listen, we didn't know where they were last time. For a while.
They were eating a little salad upstairs.
They were running Dunlops.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, man. Old Jim Boucher's up there, like, trying to figure out who these two young ladies are running the show.
Oh, yeah.
But back at it this week with the boys. I don't even know who we play, but we're back at it. Anyway. Fly boys, looking good. Last two games, even Baller had just said, and Debo woke up from a nap and agreed that the last two games were really good. That win in Ottawa was impressive. How about G? Of course, scoring against the old team. It always happens. Two minutes in, but
nice goal.
His 300th goal. Congrats,
yeah,
G.
Absolutely. Congrats, G.
Big accomplishment. And you know, the win this week against the Blues, our good buddy Chief. I wish he could have at least won in Boston.
Yeah.
You know, and not win last night, but they've lost 8 in a row. But the Flyers looked really good last night, and they worked their asses off, which they have all year.
Yeah.
But they really looked good last night.
They did. Yeah, we were at the game.
Yeah.
You had Elvie, you had my two girls. One fell asleep.
I didn't see much of the game.
But it was funny, you know, listening to them talk. They were talking about shots on net being, you know, yeah, the currency of winning the game. And
yeah,
you know, Flyers were
funny.
Out shooting the Blues, obviously, a good chunk of the first half of the game there, which, you know, we landed up leaving halfway through. But actually, we didn't see one goal. As soon as we walked out of the building,
the
goals
scored.
Started coming. But the effort, the opportunities, I mean, the Flyers looked good.
They
look crispy and... energy. I thought the energy in the building could have been a little bit better, but that was before the goals. I think.
I agree, and it did get better once they started scoring.
Right.
We saw a couple scraps right away.
Yeah, a couple tillies.
Brayden Schenn was trying to get his team going. The leader he is. Nick Seeler's a tough customer.
Yeah.
We've seen that. That was interesting. And then one of the funny things also was as soon as that fight was over, I watched Bartuzzo jump over the bench, and I saw him skate by our boy Big Mac, and you could tell I didn't know exactly what he's saying, but he looked at him, and then Mac shook his head. Yeah. So I said, Elvis, hey, Elvis, pay attention. They're going to fight. And, you know, they fought. It wasn't much of when they fell quickly, but Elvis is like, how did you know they're going to fight? How did you know? I'm like, pay attention, boy.
Yeah, watch the
you
game.
Be watching instead of Snapchatting girls.
Yeah, IG Live.
Yeah, IG. I haven't let him go in there in a while.
Jeez.
Thank God he doesn't have a lot of people following
him. No kidding, right? Geez. But that would have been a nice time to go IG Live.
It would have been.
A couple tillies. Big win.
But you know, the identity they're creating.
Yeah.
And that's
it's for real.
We talked about it. It is for real. You can just see it. You can tell when a team's like gelling and coming together and talking to a couple of the guys this week. You know, they're doing everything together.
Yeah.
And that's so big, and people can say it's cheesy. It's not. That's what builds a team, and it's really cool to see. And you're seeing it on the ice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can't deny it.
Yeah, you can't deny it. Yeah. You know, we've talked about, you know, they possibly won a few games they shouldn't have. You know, Carter Hart's bailing them out, but, you know, that team collective, that energy, that identity they're creating, everything you're alluding to, is for real. Whether they can sustain this or not is the question. But you know, I think the foundation has been laid nicely. Obviously, they're buying into Torts and his system, and buying into the collective as a team. So you know, from a perspective, you know, a fan's perspective, I'm happy with it.
It's
beyond my expectations of the season so far. It's still early, obviously, so we'll see where this goes. But the fans got to be happy with
the
direction
you know.
And what's happening. So
yeah, it's funny. Like they've been kind of caught in the Phillies storm,
right?
and the Eagles as well. Because I mean, like the Eagles haven't lost a game. Knock wood. Sorry, boys. I don't want to jinx you. So it's always tough early, but this starts good, and I think people are taking notice to it. And you know, TK's playing well. Hayes is playing well. The guys you really need with Coots being out, and Atkinson, and JVR with his finger. You almost forget, like, we're missing three top line guys, at least top six players on the team.
Yep.
And Tippett, since he's come back, he's played really well. Boy, he can shoot a puck,
he can.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow. He can really shoot it. So it's been fun to watch, just the effort and everything. And it's nice to see him getting rewarded with it.
Yep, 100%. They're gonna have to find a way just to keep scoring goals, right? They're the bottom three goals for in the league. You know, five goals last night, which is, you know, an exception to the rule here with them. But they're gonna have to find ways to continue to score by committee, because as we know, they don't have that go-to goal scorer, you know, that elite player to always lean on to squeeze out a goal every other game. So. You know, I think that's going to continue to be challenging for them to score goals.
Yeah.
But they're finding a way. You know,
finding
I think that's what good teams do. They find a way, whatever that looks like, scoring by committee. But you know, it'd be nice to get Atkinson and a couple of these guys back in the lineup just to help. You know, obviously donate to the offense.
Right.
But, you know, that being said. You know, it could take away from some of the essence that's going on, too. You never know how that plays out, right? I mean, there's some intangibles about having a young guy that's a spirited, energetic guy in the lineup contributing that way versus, you know, being more of an offensive guy leaning on for point production. But we'll see how that plays out. And our good friend Drew is back in town this weekend.
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday, so, Claude makes his first appearance in a different uniform.
Yeah.
In the Wells Fargo Center. So that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, look forward to seeing him. And then our buddy Kubel.
Ah, too bad he was not with Washington. He got picked up off of waivers by the Caps. Too bad he wasn't there a couple weeks ago because he would be using... He would have got a chance to feel this Tovey, which he still will.
Yep, we'll be back and watch, but it would have been nice to see him.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him.
You know, I say I'm surprised or not surprised that he got thrown on waivers. You know, Cube's one of those guys that, you know, I think that when teams go through little droughts, he's kind of like becomes, I say the scapegoat, but, you know, the guy that's kind of highlighted as, you know, do we move this guy or whatnot? You know, he's been in that position a couple of times in his career. But wish him the best. You know, the guy can skate. He's strong. He can shoot. I think just like he did in Colorado, he found his groove. He found, you know, his lane he needs to stay in. Obviously, Toronto was struggling a little bit. They're, you know, they're right there with the rest of them now. But he lands up, taking some bit of a fall. But wish him the best there in Wash. I think he'll 100%. Be able to contribute there.
Don't worry, Cube. We'll get a Tovey in your hand in a few weeks.
We will. We'll be back. I think we're ready to rock, Nast.
Well, let's do it.
Episode 93. Can you believe
it? Wow, 93. Oh, Jakub Voracek's number. Yeah. Nasty Bear.
Absolutely. Episode 93 presented to you by our good friends at Curaleaf. Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a long-time patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Google Curaleaf PA, stop by one of our 18 locations across the Commonwealth, or visit curaleaf.com/locations.
Locations.
Let's go, Nast.
Let's do it.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we would love to welcome back our good friend and best-selling author, Mr. Chris Terry, and I like to call him Dog. What's up, brother?
What's up, guys? Always great to be on with you guys. Yeah, I love the best selling. You guys can sell it all you want. It's fun. Anytime, you know, that's what I love when
smoking mirrors, Bundy.
Yeah, right. You know, but it's funny. Anytime someone like you see like somebody write a book and they're like, "Oh, best selling author," I'm like, "How do I know it's a best selling author?" Right? So everybody that has a book's a best selling author.
I said it, so you are.
Right,
it's official.
Right, that's official now.
Yeah, you put it out.
Great to be here, guys.
Yeah, good to see you.
Appreciate your time, man. Busy on your book run. You're all over the United States here. Pushing this thing?
Yeah, I mean, the first, actually, this week I got a couple of events at start. And, you know, with the Phillies in the World Series, it was, you know, the book came out, I think it was October 25th, I think it was the actual release date. So we've had, you know, good past 2 weeks now of it being out on Amazon or Triumph Books or Barnes & Noble, wherever you get it. And it's been interesting because the Phillies, you know, how we're doing so well, and I plan to kind of execute when the date came out, but... You know what? There's nothing you can do when a team is in a, you know, deep run and then get to the World Series. So I was thrilled that the Phillies did so well and the city had such an amazing time with that. But now it'll be time to kind of getting out and doing some of the mandatory book signings that I have to do. But in general, you know, I'm going to go to like Dagwood's Pub in Northeast Philly to start it. Funny, people are like, why are you going to a pub? You know, well, I don't drink anymore, so I'm pretty good about that myself, going to a bar, but that's not my issue anymore. But I figured, like, you know what, Northeast Philly Bar is exactly the kind of place that I would like to go and get a book signing started, and I think that's exactly the kind of person I am, but that's the kind of people that I, you know, I seem to mesh well with, and you know, that's Philadelphia at its rawest form. That's where you get the sports fans and stuff, so I'm pretty happy about that, and now... you know, with extra time, I can start getting out to a couple Barnes and Nobles and local places just to meet and greet people and talk about the book a little bit.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Beautiful, yeah. What's the process of writing a book like? I mean, it's been a long time coming, right? I mean, you got a crazy story, you know, Road to Redemption. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know what, guys? Actually, when I came on with you guys, probably might have been, I guess it was 2021, beginning of 2021 when I kind of came out with my story. And what happened was it coincided with me being asked by Triumph Books. They'd asked me many times before, and I think, you know, like three or four times if I'd be interested in doing a book. I think they like taking athletes that played a certain duration in a city and then doing a regional sports story on it. And they, you know, I guess they'd heard through people that there was, you know, me or Ron Hextall that they'd wanted to have do a book. I was a character in the room, probably have good stories to tell. So I finally decided, you know, when the Flyers canned me and I wasn't doing the NBC stuff anymore, that... it would be the right time to take for myself to kind of put on paper what my journey in life was like for just the ordinary guy out there, because that's what I was. You know, I had gone through so much, I think, in terms of me getting as a young teenager to find the fortitude and the attitude to stay with hockey. I wasn't 6'5", you know, 250 at the time. I was a smaller guy and I grew later, but I stayed with it. And I was lucky I had my dad. My parents stuck with the belief that my dad had seen enough. You know, they say when you see somebody at like 12 or 13, you get an idea of how they'll be later. And I'm just lucky my dad didn't give up on me. I quit hockey at 14 for a year.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah. And you know what? There are stories. I think you hear a little bit more of them in football, but I love telling minor hockey parents, like, get your kid away from the rink sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, it's so important because, you know, all those things you're doing, you're pushing these kids every single day. It's almost like you need the computer to program itself. And then remember that stuff. When you keep pushing a kid back to the rink, all you're doing is the physical skills, and you're not allowing any of that mental or the emotional part of the game to crawl into your space. So I actually think that year off was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I got away from a lot of the garbage that I was going through in Ottawa. I think it was a political hotbed of hockey, you know, whose dad was doing business with whose dad, and that got the kid on the game, which is just total bullshit.
Yeah.
And I still see it now. And you know, it's funny, I talked to my dad about that, and you know, there's other good players in Ottawa. Like, I'd say the two best players probably in the city of Ottawa at 71 birthdays were ironically me and Sean O'Donnell.
Odie.
Yeah, and Odie. It's funny, I played, you know, we're the same age, and I played like a couple of years before Sean made it. And he ended up playing longer than I did. He got in the right teams, right situation. He was a long-tenured guy. But, you know, it's funny how you could say that at 10 years old, and then when you look at the kind of the conventional map of who ended up going to longer, it was me and Odie.
Wow.
At the time. There were other good players, too. The Rivers, Jamie Rivers was 2 years younger than us. He played many games for Boston in the league. His brother Sean as well for Tampa played one game. But, you know, again, I skied for a year, so I love telling that story. People don't believe it, but yeah, I did not play hockey for an entire calendar year at 14.
Yeah, that's actually pretty amazing back then to do that, and you know, understand, you know, where your head's at, and feel, you know, recognize that you're feeling burnt out and taking that year off. I think, like,
well, I got cut.
Oh, you got cut.
I got cut from two teams, and I'm just like, you know, this is, I guess, not in the cards. I was, you know, you're a kid, you want to be with your friends, and then you realize that you've been alienated for whatever reason. I remember my buddies now tell me, like, people say when they look back and go, do you remember, like, someone said, yeah, the most criminal thing I've ever seen happen. A parent now who's like 75 is like, I remember that Tarian kid got cut. And, you know, and so you hear stories like that. It makes me kind of laugh a little bit. But it also vindicates my dad for having enough belief in me and then getting me out of that. Dude, you call Ottawa hockey hotbed. I think it was a mess. It was an absolute hockey mess. You know, everybody pushing their kids in directions to get to the NHL. Instead of worrying about just having fun, getting yourself to college, there was different beliefs. But, you know, my dad was vindicated through, you know, when I went to Northwood. I mean, I took a road that was completely off the beaten path. You know, talk about taking the road less traveled. That was the road so less traveled, there wasn't even any horse track marks on it. And it ended up working. And now when you look back now, I mean, I look at Northwood now, and I see the kids of NHL guys I played with, Ron Hextall's kids, Shel Samuelson's kids have gone to Northwood. Not because I went there, but because it was a great option to get them out of some of these cesspools of hockey and these junior programs and to give these kids a chance to actually flourish. What I loved with Northwood was you're on the ice 2 hours a day. You can't recreate that in any way. You're just skating all day long. You know, you're 2 hours of hard practice and you're moving, and that's where you hone your skills. And that's when I started, when I was, you know, 15, you know, turning 15 of 1987. And so I just, you know, and I when I came back, I just remember loving hockey so much.
Amazing.
Loved it. Like, it was a great, I couldn't wait to go to the rink to practice every day. And that was kind of Northwood, but that was also kind of me breaking out of my shell. I wasn't 5'8", you know, like 175 anymore. I ended up, you know, 6'3", 205, and I was growing, and I became faster and bigger than the other kids. And that's what happened in a league that was, you know, in a sport that was really more conducive to bigger people in the late 80s and 90s. You know, like, there used to be that thing where they said they'd never draft anybody under 6 feet tall, which is ridiculous because we've seen how good some smaller players are, and certainly now the way the game's played.
Yeah. No doubt. I was going to say, you know, in modern times, a player taking a year off would probably be a foreign thing. But I would say, like, the the amount of time these players spend on hockey specific now versus back in the day, you know, probably more rounded athletes. You know, maybe talk to that point on, like, you know, the mental state of these young hockey players and the pressure that the parents generally put on them to succeed.
I put it in my book, and I'm sure if someone has brought it up to me, I basically generalize and called hockey parents stupid.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, I mean, and I think the ones that are not realistic about what they're seeing.
Exactly.
The hardest part was saying, and I've been around every parent, guys. Like, I've been around, my daughters have all played Division I basketball. I've been around basketball parents. I've been around football parents now with junior. I've never seen any, I don't see anything in those sports like there is in hockey.
Really?
And I often said, like, someone says, well, why do you think that is? Honest to God, I have a few theories on it. It costs a lot of money, and I think in a certain set that there's a parent out there that actually believes his son is entitled to a piece of that ice because of the money they pay. And mm-hmm. if your kid's is not good, maybe you should be playing another sport.
Yeah,
you know, that's the hard realization, is that people can't take a good look at themselves in the mirror and understand that maybe it's not for their kid.
It's a good point.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know,
and the amount of money invested, yeah, you just think that all of a sudden you're entitled to something.
I coached for 4 years, the AAA. And Chris was okay. Like, he was still a growing, like, I'm not going to say he wasn't even close. He was a kid that was still growing. He was a slow footer type of kid, a lot like I was, except he was taller, bigger than I was at, like, 12. I can't believe I'm sitting here talking about a 12-year-old kid in hockey. But anyway, but I would have parents, you know, that had every answer.
Yeah.
Not all of them, some of them. So when I did say parents and hockey parents are stupid, some of them are. And unfortunately, it's the ones that, I don't know, maybe something eluded them in their own past as an athlete,
yeah,
where they're trying to.
That way.
Yeah,
I
right,
see
that's what it is, yeah.
You know, with Elvis playing, I see it from other teams that we're playing. You hear parents and you're like, they're mites. They're seven.
Yeah, they're living
vicariously
through.
They're not
going to
get
kids,
drafted
yeah.
this year.
That's I tell parents that. They yeah. think their kids are going to play in the NHL tomorrow and they're 12 years old.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Delusion.
Yeah, and so that's part of it, you know. Or, you know, I hear, like, you know, little Johnny's dad, Bob. Boy, Bob was a really, really good hockey player, and he just didn't make it. And now I'm realizing, well, little Johnny's paying for that right now.
Yeah,
you know, so,
yeah, right. Like a life sentence.
I hear parents, and you know what? I think some of it, you're so competitive. Like, I'll get on Elvie, and then I'm like, he's eight. He just turned eight. What am I doing? I don't want to make it not fun for him. But some of the times you hear these parents, and I'm like, what's the car ride like, you know, going home? Like,
oh, yeah.
It's that bad there in front of people. What's it like on the way home? And I'm like, it kind of puts me back. Let me take a step back.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Like, you know, you want them to play the best they can, but Elvis just turned eight.
You got to have fun. Man.
Yeah,
it's a
that's
game.
The whole
it's a
thing.
Game.
My son packed it in on hockey, and I think it was a COVID. They lost a year of development, really, they did. I think it's going to be that 2 years. The kids were getting changed in the back of fans
yeah,
and stuff.
Right.
They were sneaking them in rings.
Like, I remember Christopher was like last year, and he's played like a level down just to play because they were allowing. I was trying to figure out what rinks would allow them in there without having to go through like 19 tests. And,
yeah.
And the coaches are wearing masks on the bench and everything, kids. And so I just. I'm like, you know what? He said, you know what, Dad? Chris is 15. And he's 6'5", 230.
Wow.
And that was an easy call for me to say, you know what? It might be a better thing for him to play football.
Hmm.
And he loves it.
Great.
He's happy. He smiles. He comes home happy every day. Awesome. And I know that he can, with that sport, he can control the effort. Because his physical abilities will take care of themselves if he wants to put the work in, instead of me pressuring him to play a sport of hockey that maybe he doesn't love or is behind the ball at, quite honestly, at this point. You know, I want him to go to college. That's all I want my kids. Go to college, have fun, but make sure you're enjoying your sport.
Yeah. Yeah, really good point. And your story is really about resilience, right? From a young youth hockey player and then, you know, playing pros and then in your afterlife of hockey, right? Your post career. Talk about that and, you know, some of the demons you faced and how you're able to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, my story is pretty public now, but alcohol was my demise. And, you know, right, I played with you my last year, and I was struggling so bad that year. You know, I was going through, I was my own personal demons. I tried to hide what I could from everybody. Derek, you were there too. Yeah. No alcoholic wants to say, especially at like 34 years old, like, I'm really bitten by this. And it was years, you know, probably years in the making. I can safely say, and I tell everybody this, the only year that was like that was my last year after the lockout, where I felt like I was really, owned by the disease of alcoholism, and I, you know, wasn't myself. The years before that, I was, you know, I'd get out there, and I was a drinker. You know, there's nights I'd party, but I came to play. I wasn't afflicted by the withdrawals and the other things that come with it and the demons that come with it. So my career ended in 2006. I'd lost my sister that year to a heart ailment we did not know about. It was a sudden cardiac death in 2006 at the very height. I mean, I couldn't have been more at the height of my alcoholism when that happened. She's my only sister, someone who wanted me desperately to get sober. And that was really, I think, where my story in and of itself kind of took off from a point like, man, I'm low. You know, I didn't have nothing. I lost my teammates. I lost everything that I'd had in a sense because, you know, I was the guy in the room. You guys probably could attest to it. I loved coming and being with my teammates. Yep. Like, yep. I loved that more than anything. And I went out of my way as a guy who'd still play 20 minutes a night to still try to be somebody in the room to keep it loose, to keep it so guys are able to play and not get inside themselves too much. I took great pride in that for many years, to be a good all-around locker room guy, but also a good player on the ice too, to what best of my abilities. And, you know, I was taken apart by that. And I lost my sister. I went to a rehab. I went to Karen Recovery Center in Warnersville, Pennsylvania, where I do work now, you know, which is amazing. I'm coming full circle, and I'll talk about that. But these are things that I had to get down into the worst mud in the ground that I've ever been in. And I had to self-reflect. Like, I was alone 30 days. My sister was dead 2 weeks before. I'm in a rehab. I'm rooming with a 20-year-old kid. I just played 12 years in the NHL. My career was over. Diana, my wife, was pregnant with Christopher at the time. I had three little girls who I loved more than anything, and I knew that I just could not be that person. So I went in, I came out, I got 2 years, and that's kind of where my journey started. I was lucky enough at the time to have had really good people like Peter Lukko, Paul Holmgren, who just got the job, Sean Tilger, and they gave me a chance to do radio. You know, I was doing pre and post game, and what a great, great opportunity just from being a guy I was in the room that liked to speak over the years and said, you know, let's give this guy a chance, you know. And they were making changes anyway.
Yep.
But that wasn't the end of my alcohol journey. You know, as I went through it, I slipped up again in about 2008 and very quietly, never to the level. See, where I went in the rehab, guys, where I went in is I can't explain the level, how high my level was. Like, when I went away, I was a 0.63. When people understand what blood alcohol level is. I mean, that's a world record. Nobody lives past a 0.4. And I was standing, like, walking, talking, breathing like I am right now. I would have looked. I'd been like, there's no way that guy could possibly, but I was. Wow. And so when I went back out again, I had to pick my spots. I was doing radio. We had, like, maybe say the Flyers had like 3 days off or somewhere. I'd go out one night and then kind of revert back just to, you know, behaving myself. But it didn't, and it didn't take up a whole lot of time, but it got tiring for me. And it was like I said, February 7, 2011 is the day that I put it down for good. I just, it was nothing. There was nothing, no divine intervention. Was something, but maybe there was something. Yeah, woke right. Me up at like 6 a.m. and said, you know what, you're gonna do this right now, you're gonna figure it out, and you got too many people that count on you. And so that's where the story came about, where I just said, like, this is enough's enough, and people deserve far better than what I'm giving them, especially my kids. And so that's where I made the decision that day that I was going to put the work in. I was going to get around people that you know, I probably partied with once that are sober also. And that's where the day changed from then. And It's been a lot of perseverance has been very much part of my story, guys, my whole life. You know, whether making it to the NHL, finding a way to stay. But then this has been certainly my hardest, most difficult achievement was to get sober, stay sober, do the right things, be the right person, give back to people that are struggling. And I've done that for years, but it wasn't until, you know, 2021 when things changed in my life that I said, you know what, to do the brave thing, you have to do the hard work, and that's to be able to strip yourself of who you are. And because ultimately, when you get sobriety, you have to hold it, and to hold it, you have to give back. And that's the message, and to let other people know struggling, like, it's okay. You're not a loser. I don't think of myself as a loser. I'm thinking of somebody that had a life experience,
right. And
I got through it. And, you know, and then part of my story is pulling yourself out of that gutter. Life's fucking hard sometimes.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know, nobody has a perfect life. So anyone that says, oh, you know, he struggled with that, everybody has something wrong and with them, and it's what you're able to do to try to better whatever that is that ails you, but also to be a better person in the process. And I think that's what I've tried to do. So when I openly tell people all the time, if you need help, call me, reach out to me on Facebook Messenger. And you know what? People are starting to do it. It's starting to resonate more. I have a lot of aftercare facilities in the city that that I support. I think rehabs are great. When I get people that they're willing to go away for 30 or 60 days, I send them to Karen in Wernersville. And when they get out, there's so many great aftercare places. And that's where the part for me, which was so important, was to put more of an emphasis on aftercare, so people can. You know, they got to live again. You know, when you're in a rehab for 30 days, you're safe. You know, everybody's in there and you're all rah-rah and we're getting sober. But when you get out of there, it's about 1 out of 10 people that make it, you know, in terms of rehab. And then there's relapses. I didn't make it my first time. I was not a first-time winner, but that's okay.
That's okay, yeah.
That's relapse sometimes is very important in terms of the long process.
Yep.
I tell them it's not a requirement. Trust me, you're going to get the same answer. You don't need to do it because you're going to find out exactly what I found out time and time again, that nothing changes. It doesn't matter. I am who I am, and I will always revert. If I took one drink today, that's the part for me now, is I have to hold on to it with everything I have. One drink will ruin everything that I've done to this point. So I have to be aware of that, and I am. I'm guarded against it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I can still be the same person I am. I still have a ton of fun. I love to go golf, and I love hanging out with you guys, any group of people.
Right.
I love spending time with them. My kids now respect me. And those are the best parts of life. You know, I'm able to be the genuine person I always wanted to be and not be the one that was controlled by the demons of alcohol. But it's been a long time now, you know, come up on 12 years. So, but I'm still, every day I still make amends, and then every day I try to be a better person. It's not perfect. I don't have a perfect life. Still have many other issues and shit that goes on, and like we all do. But what's good, where my story is, where someone maybe listening to this hears, is that it doesn't involve alcohol anymore. So for me, whatever problem is there can be handled accordingly,
because
I don't have to fall back on that stuff.
Yeah, no doubt, and the story of hope for sure.
Yeah, and that is right, and that's the end. Like, that's the part, is that if you are struggling, like I tell you, I did this, and if I believe I did this, anybody can do it. So if you're struggling, believe in yourself, and then believe in that there are people out there that want you to be well and want you to be the best version of yourself. And the biggest lie that I hear people say all the time about alcohol is, oh, I'm never going to have fun without it.
Yeah,
that is the biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever heard in my life. And I'm telling you, from someone that used to say, oh, I can't live without alcohol. I was like that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine ever sipping it again. And I can't begin to tell you the amount of fun I have without it, because I have tons of it.
Yeah. Not to mention remembering your nights and remembering the experience, because you're actually more present, right? I mean,
I've woken up feeling like crap quite a few mornings in my life, I don't have that anymore. You know, if I wake up in the morning feeling hungover, it's because I had too much ice cream the night before.
Yeah, right, ice cream hangover.
That's it. You know,
no doubt. You know, a lot of guys struggle with what you've gone through, right? Alcoholism and just addiction in general. Say, just in the hockey bubble.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this is stemming from the culture of hockey, especially in the past when it was heavily self-medicating with alcohol, right? And I think things have transitioned. There's more plant-based medicine, cannabis, and other alternatives now. Talk to that versus just like being a micro of the macro problem, because I think the culture of hockey has probably been the root cause of a lot of guys' issues to some degree. You want to talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not a guy that ever throws anybody under the bus, but if you think that I'm a lone wolf in this,
no,
that's my point.
There's fucking legions of us. And I'm not saying like misery likes company. I don't. I wish no one had this, and I wish I was the only one to take the hit for everybody and say, guys, trust me.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, this is a very, very, I hate to say a problem, because I look at the hope end of it, but you're right, Riley. There's a culture that came with this league that's gone back, some 100 years.
Yeah, right.
Right, like the culture of the game was, go out, play hard, work hard, and you got a night out in the team, go out and drink beers with your buddies.
Yeah.
Yep. And I tell people, like, I was raised in that culture.
Sure.
Small town, Ottawa, cold winters. My dad, be a good teammate, do the right things for your teammates, and, have a beer after the game with them. But don't ever do drugs, they'll kill you.
Yeah.
And I lived by those standards.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Totally, I did. And so, I guess the culture of the sport caught up. I think having one or two beers after a game became a lot easier to have three or four.
Sure.
And, alcoholism is a progressive disease. It gets worse and worse and worse. But I've seen many, many guys in this league afflicted by addiction, whether it be drugs. More certainly alcohol, far more prevalent because of the culture of the sport. of the sport that we live in. Mm-hmm. That has changed.
Yep.
That's changed a lot. You know, yeah. Now, like, you know, before where somebody used to say, oh, there's a rumbling. You know, no one would go whispering, but if you heard a rumbling that there was a guy doing cocaine in the 90s, yep. That was a really big deal.
Yeah.
Where now that kind of adage may have changed a little bit, where the alcohol is now the demon, because it does far more worse for an athlete long term because it stays in your body.
Yeah.
Where someone may turn their head to saying, like to me, cocaine is like, you know, I think Scarface and Tony Montana. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I'm like, that's what I think, you know, like, and alcohol wasn't so much, but it's on every street corner. It does just as much damage. So I think a lot of guys in the league now have, I think through society have been deemed that alcohol is really bad for athletes now. And the problem I have with that is that, and I've been around long enough to know, guys are going to do something. They need a release of some kind. And I think that is, will be and forever will be an issue in professional sports in general, is the high the players chase away from the game. They're getting that high in the game. What are they doing away from it?
Yeah.
And I wish there was a great answer for that, or I wish I had that answer, but I just know the way young people are when you give them money in their bank accounts, time on their hands.
Sure.
And situations that they're not accustomed to handling through sheer wisdom.
Yep.
You know, I know that now because I'm 50. I have all these years of wisdom, and I've seen all these things, and I see young guys come up, and I watch them, and I know. You know, like I went and talked to the Washington Capitals this summer. They had me come in and speak to their 20-year-olds, 18 to 20-year-olds, their development camp. Some guys just drafted two nights earlier, and I shared with them for about 40 minutes. This is exactly – I was exactly you guys.
Mm-hmm.
No different. Heck, my first year in the league, I hardly drank in the NHL. Hardly drank because I was so focused on being a rookie and staying in the league and you know, people, what they saw of me and how they perceived me. And I was totally focused. But I said the same thing, like, you be careful because you just never know. Yep. You never know how it's going to afflict you, because it's going to afflict you, or it could afflict you differently than it does somebody else who doesn't necessarily is adept to becoming or having a problem with alcohol.
Yeah, 100%. You know, what I've seen too is that there's so much emphasis on recovery, right? It's like work versus recovery, like strength and conditioning. So much money and resources poured into it. Alcohol, as we know, is not great for sleep. It's not great for recovery, right? So guys are always going to naturally lean towards something to help with that recovery process. You know, there was a lot of, say, ignorance and misunderstanding of alcohol, what it was doing to the body and nervous system back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. We self-medicated with it because it was the thing to do.
Yep.
Now there's more awareness and consciousness around it. But at the end of the day, guys are still in physical pain, right? They got pain. They're trying to rid their body of inflammation, as well as some sort of emotional, you know, issues that they're dealing with. They're
for sure.
Human beings, right?
Yes.
I mean, dealing with whether it's the game itself or their off-ice issues, personal issues, right? So
look at Tom Brady, right? Something.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's a big emotional issue, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And he's going through a marital problem.
Yep.
Publicly, and his play looked like it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that's a completely focused athlete, right?
Yep.
The goat of all goats.
He's a Jedi, yeah, exactly.
He's the Jedi, right? And we just watched him have a human moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So, and so naturally, humans are going to need something, like to your point earlier, to release or express or whatever that lands up being, a management tool. And I think you and I have talked about this before. You know, your traditional substance abuse model is, you know, pure sobriety. You know, I come a little bit more from an alternative perspective, but you're seeing guys utilize cannabis or different cannabis-based products to help manage inflammation, pain, sleep. And in my opinion, it is some sort of drug diversion model or harm reduction model where it's certainly better. Yes, you can abuse cannabis. You can abuse anything.
Sure.
I mean, you go down the list of things we can abuse, which is anything around us. But as it comes to, you know, pertains to recovery and being a better performer, right? I mean, you're going to sleep better, you're going to recover better, and,
sure,
you know, there's an element of harm reduction and drug diversion there. But, I just wanted to throw that out there and get your thoughts on, you know, the modern, you know, more progressive athlete versus, you know, the old school hockey player.
You know, and I put this in the book. You know, I said, like, I'm an advocate of cannabis from a standpoint of helping with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Reduction, especially in pro sports.
Sure.
Like, I mean, is it when I look back at my career, and this is another one, I didn't realize how many guys actually used weed even when I played.
Right.
You know, I had an episode, and again, it was in the book in high school that I never did it. Now, I did sit, like, since later in my years, but I was terrified. I thought something was laced in high school. I wrote about it in the book. Yeah. I had a friend actually concur with said, I remember that. It was the first time I ever did it. I said, I looked at the wall. I said, God, I'll never do this again. And it wasn't until
the old devil's lettuce.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever happened there, somebody put a little hot sauce in it. So, I'm glad everyone has a little bit of laugh at the cannabis, right? Because it is like one of those ones where you see somebody just smiling. And you can't walk through any major American city now that every breath you take, it just runs right through your sinuses. Yeah, so, again, in all seriousness, I tell people, if you had an option, if you had no other option between alcohol and weed, and you're an athlete, smoke away, my friend, because thing is just not, it's not conducive to what you're trying to do, both as an athlete and a human being.
Yeah, right. You know, and the cannabis side of things too, it's no longer just about smoking it, right? I mean, that was the old school delivery system.
It's edibles now it's
edibles, tinctures, transdermal patches. You're talking about all the delivery systems. So, and different ratios, not to mention because back in the day you get a bag of weed and that's what you got. You know what I mean? There was no one-to-one ratio, THC, CBD, and all this other stuff. So
yeah, I had a buddy tell me, he's like, I'll tell you what, man, everything's different now with the way they got weed. Right. Because when I was a kid, I'd go up and get it off a guy and he'd pull a bag out of his underwear. He goes, $5.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, and half of it probably wasn't even weed.
Stems and seeds and whatever.
Yeah, they've really progressed with that. But and marijuana is everywhere. They're on all billboards all over the world. I tell people, and this is what I do tell parents, watch your kids with those pens, because there's a gateway to that. I tell parents, if you see your kids with the 15-year-old kids with those vape pens of any kind, say something.
100%.
Be absolutely aware of that. It's but for a 40-year-old guy, enjoy your life. That's the way I look at it. Be vigilant of it. But if you're not a drinker and you want to go out, and people have dinner parties now with these cannabis. I saw something on a YouTube the other day. I was laughing about it. But again, to me, alcohol is the demon of them all, really, because it's just so readily available. Dark, it's on every corner.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, before we move on to some Flyers hockey, any last thoughts on your book, directing the listeners to finding and purchasing a book?
Yeah, you can get it. I was selling some. I may still have some, but I'm going to do some book signings. I'm going to bring some of the books when I go out to these signings. You can go to barnesandnoble.com, triumphbooks.com, or amazon.com is the best one. And if you have read it, leave a review on Amazon. Apparently it does something with an algorithm.
Okay.
That's not really my purview, but I've been told that, so I will pass that message along. But yeah, just it is. O'Reilly, it's just about hope. It really is. It's got some good hockey stories. Somebody put something out the other day, about Lindros in the book, and I had to touch upon it because I play with him.
Right.
That's not really the point of the book. It's just kind of my how I cross paths with different people in my time here. But that's not the message. Like Johnny DeClaire, we had a great relationship, some great stories, me and him going out, and there are funny parts. There are some really funny stories in the book too, but this is a book that, about the struggle of a person, where I can't tell you, I can tell you, how alone I've been sometimes, or people may not believe that, but I was able to figure it out, and I still am trying to do that one day at a time. So if you are struggling, if you're looking for maybe a little glimpse of hope, this might be for you, because you just never know when that moment's going to hit you, where recovery has been eluding you, and you find it. And hopefully this might be the case for some people.
Yeah, 100%. And we appreciate your vulnerability.
But it's the only way to do it.
Right,
it is. It's the only way to do it. You have to get completely naked with yourself in front of the world to say, hey, listen, I've been here, I've done this. It hurt. It was painful, but here I am today.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm the version that I like, not perfect, but far better than the one that I was before.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And you, by you doing that, just allows people to resonate with the story, connect with the story, and hopefully seek help.
Yep.
It is a story of hope. So I appreciate you being vulnerable.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, congratulations.
Thank you guys. Awesome.
Powerful stuff.
It's awesome.
Know? Using your platform for good. Sorry for the quick break. Just a quick shout out to our sponsor, DLI Commercial, a premier commercial construction and building maintenance company offering support at every phase. Thank you for your support. Check them out at DLI Commercial for all your construction needs. Back to the show.
Well,
Flyers hockey?
Let's talk a little bit about the Flyers. Off to a start, 7-3-2. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Torts, first of all, what he's doing?
I think what happened was when I look back at the team, it looked like the culture was broken, right? Like, there was, like, the team had injuries last year, but they had guys that were up, and, I mean, they still, it just wasn't, they weren't competing at a level you want. They weren't being pushed to a level that fans expected. I think bringing Torts in, like, I like Torts. Like, I said that this summer. I like the hiring of Torts. He's making the team, he's building back what the roots of the team are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Compete hard, work hard. There's no more fighting anymore. I mean, they have a couple of guys that could do it, but it's not about that anymore. There is a progressive part to Flyers hockey as well that I think people are adjusting to. The league has changed.
Right.
So that, unfortunately for the Flyers and the model that they built from the ground up, that's changed a little bit too. But at the same time, you can't lose what you are and your connection to the city.
Yeah.
And I think that Torts is trying to bring that back. Ultimately, if they keep working hard like they are, like, they're lacking star power.
Yes.
We know that. When you turn on a TV at night, there's no 97 like Edmonton has with McDavid or those guys that are going to like be like, wow, we want to get out and watch it. They don't have that. So they're going to struggle with that in terms of people garnering interest. But they're working hard, and those are the things that I said last year that I didn't like. I didn't like much of anything about on or off the ice. And this year there's been a lot more to like about the team. From a standpoint of them winning, their goaltending's been unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, Carter, I know he's off against the Blues, which we'll talk about, but he was sick. But he's been the best goalie in the league so far. I think the Flyers' record has exceeded what it should be because of that goaltending.
100%. Yeah.
But I'm not going to complain about it because I'm seeing effort. And if the players are there, the 20 guys that are dressed at night, I commend that effort. And I say good job by John Tortorella for, you know, getting this thing off in the right direction. You know, the Phillies, again, you know, the Flyers get mired in the middle of a World Series run, right, a good start. And, you know, but I will say this, like, they lost three in a row, and I really thought the wheels were going to start coming off fully, because they're lacking talent in areas it's going to take to win long term.
Yes.
And, but they've kept surprising me. They beat Ottawa, who's a complete fraud. No, I mean, they are, again. Like, you know, we were told they were going to be good. They have, like, the announcers up there tell you, like, they were getting their rings carved. And, I mean, Ottawa lost again. And and so, like, you know, but again, it's Ottawa. You got to build some excitement. And then, you know, the Flyers beating St. Louis and our great friend Chief Berube, who we all kind of spoke to, they're off to an unbelievably bad start. But the Flyers just home cooked them.
They did.
So they're playing hard. They got good goaltending from Sandstrom.
Yeah.
Their team is playing well. They've taken away a lot of the middle of the ice in the D zone, and they've been resilient, you know, in terms of goal scoring, getting guys like Konechny's really stepped up.
Yep.
Scotty Lawton's done a great job. Hayes has had a good start to the year. Their D have been pretty good. Giving up a lot of shots some games, but for the most part, last night was a good, the St. Louis game was, I thought, a good hockey game in terms of regular season, and they can't score, and the Flyers, you know, are a team that surprised a lot of people coming out, but it's been, I think, a little bit of fear, guys, of the new coach. I've been there before, where you're like, man, I don't want to make one mistake because I'll be in the doghouse, so I think that's resonated through the locker room, but I give them credit. I can't say anything but good things about this team coming out of the gate and the effort that they've put in.
Yeah, no doubt. You kind of alluded to it. Do you think that the Flyers are able to sustain this? Like, you know, you said they don't have that superstar. That, you know, I think they're the third, the bottom of the league as far as goals for, you know, third last. Like they're scoring. They had 5 goals last night. Obviously, like they're going to continue to have to score by committee. How do you see this thing playing out? Like, you know, they were giving up a little bit of probably more chances against early on. Carter Hart's making the big save. But you're right. Their identity's there. The culture is there. You know, they're working. They look like a team. How does this play out?
Yeah, they're structured, right? Yeah. Like they're playing with a little bit more structure. It's one of those ones where you say, like, you know, it's hard to say, but I think that the lack of talent is going to catch up to them when these games become far richer come, yeah, like December,
sure,
when the playoff push really comes together. Like, but again, if they formulate a team that works hard and gives themselves a chance, and that goaltending, I mean, the goaltending numbers are around 950.
Yeah, he's...
I don't know if there's ever been a goalie that's held numbers that high in the history of the league. So, so I mean, that may level itself out as well, too, where you'll see some losses creep in. But, you know, from what this team is, guys, I mean, we're not talking about a Colorado Avalanche here where, you know, they're got off to the start they're supposed to have.
Right.
It's a team that's past expectations for what we thought at the end, beginning of the year. We did a thing on the podcast, Snow the Goalie, where we counted some of the wins and stuff that they had and losses early in the first 20 games, and I had them at 8-10-2.
I heard that.
Now, I thought before the Ottawa game, maybe they'd still be in and around that number, but not the way I picked it. Like, they're beating Florida or, you know, Tampa, right, and games are winning that they should not be winning. They beat Nashville, I think. But again, I think they're going to exceed that now. I mean, they only have to lose one more game in terms of getting to, like, if you're saying, like, the 8, you know, like,
right,
where they're at. So, for the wins. But they've done a good job. I just think that, you know, with the loss to Couturier,
yes,
you know, they have you know, their third pair in defense. You know, again, the matchups become more prevalent after kind of American Thanks. Middle of December, kind of, now, is, it seems like, where the league kind of takes off and starts the heavy push. Yeah, I don't know, Riley. That's a good question. I think they're a playoff team? No, I don't. I don't. And I think there's a long way to go to get to that, for me to be able to say that. Do this for another 20 games, and you might, you might have a full believer in me, but I don't know yet. I mean, I guess you can have guys that step up in situations, but it just layered down. When I go down it, it just looks like it gets too easier to check as you go down the lineup, as the games become more meaningful.
Right. It's going to be a dogfight.
I think, too, that I know personally last night I kind of forgot about, well, I didn't forget about him, but, like, Coots is out. We know that 3 to 4 months, it says. We're also missing Atkinson.
Yep.
JVR.
Yeah.
You know, you get them back. There's more goals in your lineup.
Yep.
It's not, like you said, superstar levels, but it is more goals in your lineup, so.
Sometimes that can work against you, too.
You're right, because these guys are working their bags off every night, and you cannot deny that. And I think that's, you know, that's what Philadelphia needs to get back to. That's what the fans want to see.
The one thing that we've talked about with Torso is that I like is that he's put a culture back in.
Yes.
And that was what sorely missed, and I think that's what a lot of the fans did not like last year, was the fact that the team was becoming irrelevant. Because of the way it was playing on the ice and a few other things too, but that was the part that fans, I think, really did not appreciate, and Torts has restructured it and brought life back into that.
Yes, definitely.
Any player that's rising up more than you thought outside of the guys you mentioned?
Cates I kind of like his, you know, his versatility. As he moves forward, I still think Morgan Frost. I just like them to leave him alone.
I know. I love
that. Just leave him alone and let him play a little bit. He'd be the one guy. I guess if I were like an assistant coach, I'd tell Torts. I've seen a little bit. Like, I actually kind of think that he might has a chance to surprise people.
I agree.
I don't know though. I mean, I've seen Joe guys Splash buried mentally their whole careers, and then next thing you know, he's 28, and it's too late.
Yeah,
I would like to just give that guy the same chance that they almost gave Giroux as a young guy. Just let him play. You know, there's nothing wrong, but, you know.
Start squeezing the stick. Eh? When you get scratched, and then you're coming back in the lineup, you want to play well, but you also don't want to turn it over. He's a playmaker.
Especially as a skill guy.
He's got to be allowed to make the odd mistake. Yeah. You know, as long as you're doing the right things defensively where the coach is not down on you for it. But he's a guy I like. You know, I think the defensively, they've been okay. They give up some. They're weird. Like they give up a lot of shots some games, and then games against St. Louis, it wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
St. Louis is offensively challenged for sure, But I think that for the most part, they've done a really good job. They've gotten good step ups from guys like Kevin Hayes has come out well. Sanheim's picking it up a little bit better now too. He had that contract in the offseason, and I think D'Angelo and Provorov have played pretty darn well. You know, Provorov certainly. I mean, had 2 years where, you know, there wasn't a whole lot going down. He looked like he got caught in the mix of where the team was, but he stepped it up big time this year, and he can be a difference maker if he's playing good, and he has.
Yeah, I agree. And Konechny, we've talked about this before. Konechny, I mean, you know, he's really kind of back to his all-star self. Energy, bringing the energy. I think Torts is definitely getting the most out of him. Maybe more, but I mean,
benched him a couple weeks ago. Him and Hayes in the third period, those are ones where you got to really be careful. Because they're the only two guys going.
Yeah.
We talked about that with Rupp. We had Mike Rupp on last week.
Yeah, so it worked for now. And, you know, Rupp, you know, he'd know, right?
Like, yeah, right.
I'm waiting for that part of Torts, too. Like, I never played with him, but there are guys. Like, if you talk to, he's a very, very polarizing coach. Because there are guys, you'd be like, oh, I liked him. And then there's guys like, oh, do you have a minute? Like, they want to bring you around the corner and talk about it. There are guys like that. So just a matter, and he will have guys form opinions of him like that on this team too. Yeah, that's the way it is with him.
Yep, I guess time will tell. I mean, they haven't really gone a long enough stretch for him to have the wheels fully fall off, right? And have the media fully all over him and his emotions.
Yeah,
they haven't lost like five or six in a row.
Yeah,
it was three in a row, and he was getting kind of like hairy there for a little bit.
Yeah.
He's going to say what's on his mind. I mean, even now, there's still guys when you kind of read the stuff, he still really pushes on the young guys.
Yeah,
and you can tell every night there's never any satisfaction.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know.
Don't let it get good to you.
Yeah, that's don't let it get good.
Yeah,
that's the saying.
Yeah, that's a hard year though. You know, like when you're going like that. Like, I mean, Hitch was like that. Like, fuck, you'd come in and you'd win a game like 4-1 or 4-2, and you'd want to break down how the other team scored the two goals.
Yeah.
So just let it go, dude. We got another game tomorrow night.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you play the right way?
Yeah.
We did. We won 4-2.
I know, right?
Goals go in.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's funny. Goals, it happens. It happens in the NHL.
Yeah.
One quick question. Jim Montgomery, former teammate for a little bit of time. He's got Boston, the Boston Bruins starting very hot.
Yeah.
11-2, I believe their record is right now.
Yeah, and they had like a self-inflicted gunshot wound over the weekend with that signing of the kid where the his name eludes me right now, but that was kind of like an unforced error.
Yeah.
And they've had to scramble out of that. Like, a lot of the veteran players really stepped up. So they're playing good hockey. I mean, you keep wondering, like, when Bergeron and Marchand and Pasternak are going to finally kind of hit a wall, but they don't, right? Like, they're still.
Krejci as well. Like, Krejci. He came back.
Krejci's back. Yeah, for
they're unbelievable. Yeah, it's like, you know, but it's almost like they do it. We talked earlier about another player, but you do it all year and then get to the playoff, or do they run out of gas? You know, like, I mean, it's a tough year, but they are counted on so much.
Those guys do a lot.
A lot of minutes.
They do
a
lot.
There's a lot of great storylines around the NHL, like, this year in terms of teams. Like, like with Toronto. Yeah. I mean, they're just a. You know, everybody's hanging on them. Nobody believes in them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like they're all waiting for another first round. So there's a lot of great, like, really great storylines. McDavid on a scoring, you know, tirade right now. I think he had 13-13. So they'll be interested to see what he does. And who's a really good team? Is there somebody else that surprised people? Like, the Flyers, probably the biggest surprise, I guess, in the East by the standings.
Devils
for sure. Yeah, because I remember we saw the Devils like second night or first night.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they looked horrible. Like, it looked like Lindy Ruff was just playing out a streak, and then they've turned a corner. Their young guys are starting to play well.
Yeah.
The Rangers again. You know, Shesterkin's had kind of a shaky start to the year where he wasn't where he was. Islanders looked like they're good again.
Yeah.
Montreal's playing better than they were. Luke Richardson in Chicago. I mean, they're not absolutely horrible, but they look like they were in the tank for Bedard. Type of thing, and then the problem is they brought a guy like Luke in.
He's not going to let that happen.
Not Luke, so, he's a lot like Chief, right? Like those guys. So people talk about like Flyers guys coaching and stuff. That's one thing you get from Flyers coaches, players. Like, they're not going to let anybody quit on them.
Yeah, right?
And that's why Chief has a Stanley Cup in St. Louis.
Yeah,
you got everybody to buy in really quick.
Yeah,
really, really quick.
Yeah, no doubt.
I liked hearing Armstrong come out and say, you know, this isn't our coach. You know, he took Chiefs back last week. You know,
which is big.
It is big. You know, and
you drop eight games in a row.
I don't think anyone's blaming the coach for, you know, losing eight in a row.
Give it a couple more.
unfortunately, you're probably right.
Yeah. And I would tell Chief that too, and he would start lying. Well, be like, "Oh yeah, I know, yeah. But he's you know, I mean, listen, we say that because he is a great coach.
Yeah.
And if he got fired, everybody be lining up to get him. 100%. So I think Dougie Armstrong, who I know well, I had him. He was a GM in Dallas when I was there for a cup of coffee as well. He's got. I think they're just in a really bad early season rut, and they will find their way. Mm-hmm. But, man, you could push the panic button in these pro sports leagues pretty quick, you know. And so I think that's where he's at right now. But I think Chief's a guy that a player can like every year as long as you're working hard.
Yeah,
he's never going to get in your wheelhouse. Just give him an honest effort. Do the right things on the ice, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
All right, Bundy.
We appreciate your time, man.
Guys, thank you, man.
As always.
Yeah, I love coming on.
Best-selling author. Yeah. Right there, dog.
Best-selling.
There it is.
I don't know about that, but anyway, you know what? Like I said, I hope the book helps people and someone gets a meaningful message from it. The hockey stories, I think, are great. I was lucky I had a good enough memory. When they say you're doing a tell-all, it's not really a tell-all. there's other stories. I mean, there's a million and one stories, and it's a matter of trying to pick a couple of those really good ones.
You know, the funny thing you say that, dog, is we could be just guys. Obviously, we wouldn't talk about some stuff now, but tell a story, you know, about this or that. People always say to me, fuck, you should write a book. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah, no, right?
I can't do it. You know what I mean. You don't ever want
to. Well, it's a couple stories. Yeah, no, I'm laughing. There's a couple stories I told, like, about, you know, everybody. I kind of went on questions that I put on Facebook, things that people would like to hear.
Right.
And, like, even a couple stories I told, like, there's no names. Right.
That's what
it's
I mean.
Random, you know.
Of course.
But, right. So.
But it's funny. But it's congratulations again.
Yeah. Appreciate it, guys. Guys, thank you.
It's awesome, and good luck on the book tour.
Thanks, guys.
You do it all, man.
Yeah, the book tour. Yeah, the book tour is going around Philadelphia, guys, and one in Ottawa.
Nationwide, baby.
Yeah, nationwide. Tell everybody that. Yeah. If you're looking, but you know, seriously, pay attention. If you're on social media or wherever, you could follow me either on Twitter or Facebook, and I'm posting a lot of the book signings. I'm going to probably do most of them between now. And maybe just after Thanksgiving into the middle of December.
Nice.
If some people want like Christmas gifts and stuff, I think some people may help somebody, a loved one or a friend struggling, and hopefully this book can help you find your way.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Bundy.
Thanks,
appreciate
brother.
You guys. Thank you.
A big thank you to our good friend, Chris Therrien Bundy, for hopping on, joining us in studio.
Yes.
Pumping up his new book.
Road to Redemption.
Yeah.
The Dog. Can't wait to read the whole thing.
Yeah, me too.
It's interesting, and it's like you had said to him, being so vulnerable with everything that you know he's been through. It's hopefully it helps a lot of people because he really does. He does go out of his way to do that, and he's a good dude. And we appreciate him coming on.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Obviously, you know, hearing his story, and it's not exclusive to Bundy, right? I mean, you hear this story far too often, but you know, for him to come out on the other side of it and be able to write a book and make an impact in the community is powerful. So, appreciate him coming on, being vulnerable, sharing his story, being open, you know, as he always is, and honest. Hopefully, he can help. Save a life or two,
yep,
or three.
Sure.
So,
make sure you get a copy of his book. All right, Riggs, that leads us to the clear questions presented by our good friends at Clear Rum. Let's get into them, Baller.
Let's go. Baller, what you got?
This one's from Devin Petrowski over on Instagram. This one's for Riggs. Who was the sneakiest tough guy? Like someone who always flew under the radar but could always chalk him.
Jeez, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I feel like everyone that I ran into was some bit of an established tough guy.
Yeah, for you, definitely.
But I say sneaky tough. I think we talked about him last week. Aaron Asham. You know, I'd say, like, I knew he was tough. I mean, obviously, I'd done my homework and seen him fight. But this guy, man, he could take a punch like I've never seen, and he packs a punch for his size. You know, deceiving. You got the baby face. Doesn't look like a whole
baby
lot,
face,
right?
Assassin.
Baby face assassin. But you know, I'd fought him a couple times. Once in preseason, where I did really well against him, and then had a really good one in New Jersey with him. Where
yeah, that was a really good fight.
I hit him so hard, I could feel him going down, and then whoop,
and then he came back up
and just kept throwing bombs. So I'd say Ash. You know, he's safe, man. He was legit tough for his size.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Again, sneaky. I'm not sure if that's the word because I think people knew he was tough. He had street cred, obviously, but man,
any guy that wasn't considered a heavyweight that fought him usually found out.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
100%. Like, yeah, he left his mark.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. So Aaron Asham is the answer.
Nasty. This is from our buddy Quinn over on Twitter. Can you remember a time you ever made a costly mistake as the equipment manager?
Ooh, man, that's interesting. I think if I did do something costly, I would remember it. So I can't say that I ever did that, but the worst thing that probably is always an equipment guy's nightmare is forgetting something.
Oh, yeah.
And any time that we... that it did happen a lot of times with knee braces or braces. I remember times where one was forgotten, and it was usually because we had a bin in the middle of the room. I mean, this goes back for years. Whenever someone has you, when you have two sets of equipment and you're taking one back and forth, like the knee brace, I'm saying, or a brace of any sort, you always tell the guys, hey, make sure you put it in the bin that's going on the road or going to the other rink. And it happened several times. But luckily, we're always able to get it. You know, like, it may have just been over at the center where, oh, hey, my knee brace isn't here. Well, did you put it? No, I didn't. I put it in my seat, but which in the end was my fault. But we always were able to get it. So luckily, nothing really bad ever happened that way. I remember one time, which wasn't our fault, we went to Atlanta to play. You were actually on the team that year. And they decided to tell me on the day of the game, oh, did you guys bring your whites? And I'm like, no, we brought our blacks. Oh, we want to wear our light blue jerseys tonight. And I'm like, well, we don't have our black jerseys here. Joe Seville was an intern, and he flew from Philly down to Atlanta. And I'll never forget Jeff Carter, when he left, he was like the first guy, which you were probably with him, because I thought you guys used to come back together. And he goes, did we have black jerseys hanging earlier? So Joe Seville brought the white jerseys, white socks, and white helmets. And I flipped it over. He did it in between the time you guys left the rink and the time you came back for the game.
Wow. Thanks, but, Joe.
Yep, Joe, he saved the day.
Jack of all trades does it all.
That was it.
I will say, Nast, you allowing me to use the Green Goblin might have been costly. For my hands and my hockey career, my offensive production. Let me rock that Reebok ribcore, whatever the hell it was called.
Like I decided what you could use. You guys decide what you're using. The Green Goblin.
The Green Goblin, man.
Oh, boy, what a stick that was. Do you have any of those?
I don't. God, I thought maybe you have one, a couple sniffing around.
I
here.
Don't.
Oh, that the thing old was Green Goblin.
You going to blame me for that? That's fine. Yeah. You did score on one of the best goalies.
I did. I'm not sure if I even used the Green Goblin.
Yeah, I don't know if you did either.
But, thanks for ruining my career.
You're welcome.
This is the last one for episode 93. It's your boy Chris, Christopher Mayer. This is for both of you. What's your overall thoughts on the Provy and Tony pair, and how does the power play look to you guys?
Hey, Reg, you have to get that power play going.
Yeah.
Slap shot.
Get that power play going. Yeah. As far as the pairing goes, I like the pairing, what I've seen so far. You know, knowing Proby through you, Nast, and in hearing how he's connecting some of the, you know, to some of the new teammates, and you know, having, you know, Tony, you know, be there consistently by his side, I feel like Proby's kind of finding his game again, you know, finding himself again. Power play always can use improvement, obviously. You know, I think they can definitely find ways to get more pucks to the net, and you know, just the same old stuff around power play, right? It's just generating more shots and more bodies funneling the net on secondary plays. I mean, I think you're gonna score more goals like that. I don't have a problem with the first 11 games or so, but I think Provy's kind of back where he needs to be. You know, I think maybe having no A on, you know, might be a little more humbling for him, and just kind of helping him get back to the root of what he is, and building up that leadership role without an A, and finding himself that way. But I don't know what your thoughts are. On,
yeah, I mean, I love the pairing. We talked about this before the season started. I think it was gonna. I thought it was gonna be huge for both guys to have steady. You know, steady. I believe they're a one pairing in NHL.
Yep.
And I think you. Like there's more to work on, obviously. Like again, we're early, but you can't argue the fact that they look pretty good together.
Yeah.
And they kind of complement each other. So I'm happy with it. And you know, power play, like you said, like I'll let you speak on that more. You played the game, but you know, you always can work on that, right?
So. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's gonna be all season long, right? I mean, you're always trying to generate different opportunities depending on the team you're playing, what they're taking away, what they're not taking away, where the holes are. It's always about refining, you know, the puck movement. But you know, not that I was a power play guy, you know, but I've been in enough power play meetings on both sides of it, and. Just finding ways to get good shots to the net, and generally we always talk about finding spray on the backside, weak side of the net, you know, for those rebound type of goals. I think you're going to find ways to find some trashy goals over time by just again moving pucks around the horn and getting them to the net. But certainly there's something they're always working on, right?
I mean,
never a day goes by where they feel content with the power play or the penalty kill for that matter. But it's a work in progress. Passing has got to be crisp, right? I mean, nothing worse than going around the horn and teeing up that one timer, and it's not in the wheelhouse.
It's not in the wheelhouse.
You know, and then you got to start over, and then you know everyone can see it happening, and then you got to start from scratch. So it's just about execution when it comes down to setting up in the ozone there. So a work in progress for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you are a power play guy now.
I am, yeah.
Mentally,
sure, yeah,
you definitely are on the power
net
play.
Net front, you know, directing the play, screening, getting some spray on the back. Back end, back side of the play.
Spray.
You got to get that spray.
Everybody likes the spray.
All right, Nass, that's a wrap.
That's it.
Episode 93 in the books.
Yes, sir.
Until next week, if you guys are enjoying the content, YouTube, as well as on Apple Podcasts, be sure to subscribe. Give us a follow. Until then.
See you next week.
We'll see you next week, knuckleheads.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you gotta predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.